All right, heavy metal fans, this is Chris Caffrey from Sabotage, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and Spirits of Fire, and you are listening to Sonic Perspective, so crank it up.
I am Rodrigo Altaf, bringing you yet another interview for Sonic Perspectives. On the line with me, I have one of the busiest guitar players in rock and metal today, known for his work with Sabotage, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and his solo work, Mr. Chris Caffrey. Chris, how's it going for you this Thursday morning, man?
It's actually going great. There's some crazy weather going on. I'm looking out my windows now, and there's fog rising off the snow because it went from being 0 degrees to 55 in a matter of 2 days. But things are going well. I've been doing a lot of press for the new record and talking about the music and just kind of getting back into normal life after being off the road with TSO. But things are great.
Good stuff, man. And you have a new band now entitled Spirits of Fire, with the first album being released about a month from now. So tell us about the lineup and how it came together and about the, you know, general aspects of the new album.
All right. Yeah, well, that Spirits of Fire record is the first one that I've done actually as a member of a band with Ripper Owens. Me and Ripper have been friends for so long. I mean, I met him the very first time he was in Europe with Judas Priest. He was doing press for his first record with Priest, and me and Johnny Lee were doing press for Sabotage on the Wake of Magellan album. And we'd been friends for a long time, and Sabotage toured with Priest, but I also did some work on Ripper's solo records and toured with him opening up for Ronnie Dio in the very last Heaven and Hell tours. Mm-hmm. And Frontier Records came up to me and they had an idea about me doing a record with him. And they said, hey, we could use Steve DiGiorgio from Testament on bass and Mark Zahner on the drums. And it, to me, it just sounded like something I was really into, because I mean, a lot of bands do the project records, and I always in my interviews would say that wasn't going to be something that I wanted to do. But Ripper was such a good friend of mine, and we worked together so much that I just thought that this was going to be really fun. And then the thing that really sold me on it the most was the fact that they said, hey, we want to have Roy Z produce it. And I'd never met Roy or worked mm-hmm. with Roy, but I was a huge fan of his work. His stuff with Halford and his few records with Dickinson were some of my favorite metal fans ever. So it was just something that I was very excited about, and we put it together, and I started working on music, and now a couple of years later, the record's about a month away from release.
Well, let me ask you about Roy Z for a minute, because what was it like working with him, and what did he bring to the fold in terms of guitar arrangements? Did he push you in any particular direction, or...?
Well, I mean, Roy is—he's such a funny guy. But I had no idea what to expect with him, because when you see his name, the Roy Z, I mean, you don't realize where his, you know, original roots are—not just as an artist, but as a person. And he's got the funniest Spanish accent to him, because he's slightly—I don't know exactly where he's from originally, but he's got the funniest voice. And when he talks to you, he makes everything go into silly jokes where he compares things to something that, you know, he comes up with this one liner for. So he was actually, for me, very entertaining to work with and extremely creative and very metal, which was great. I mean, as far as the songs go, me and Roy were doing the writing of the music on the album. I wrote, I believe it was 8 of the songs, and he wrote 4 of the songs. I think that's the way that it broke down in the end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I did my stuff, he was, you know, really pretty much just letting me go. When I would play him what I did, he was very happy with it, to the point actually where, you know, he was recording some rhythm work for his songs that he had done. And when he heard the sounds I had, because I was actually working on my latest solo record, The Jester's Court, at the time, and he was like, what did you do to your rhythms? And I told him that I added in what would be a 3rd and 4th rhythm tracks to the stereo. And it kind of was a sound that was similar, but it was really kind of brittle in a sense to where it made the guitars able to be mixed like bigger and more metal. And he's like, well, guess what? I go, what? He goes, you're doing this for everything now. So I had to go back while I was getting ready to mix my album and record all the guitars. He wanted me to add these extra tracks, not only to my songs, but add rhythms to all the ones that he was working on too. So I had, you know, a lot of that kind of guitar work coming at the end. And he also was just like, I forget exactly what he called it, but he wanted me to go back through every song and just add in, you know, stuff. I forget his exact word right now, but there was something where it was just a guitar track that was like the noise, you know, something where he would play from the beginning and do like little lead breaks and things and add, you know, personality to it besides the rhythms and the lead sections. And, you know, that was something that he really worked hard with me on. So, I mean, it was, he's just a great, he's a great writer. He's a great person and he's a great metal ear. So I felt very comfortable with working with him. And like I said, I had some of the most funny conversations with him. If we were working on something, if something was bothering him or not getting done the way he wants, or he didn't think it was as cool as it could be, the way he would describe what was wrong was just so funny. It was something I'd never heard before.
He's certainly a colorful character, Roy Z, man.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm curious also about what each other member of the band brought to the album. I mean, who wrote the lyrics, who brought the vocal melodies, arrangements, and whatnot?
Well, I mean, as far as the stuff that I had written, there was four of the songs that I wrote where I had actually finished in the lyrics and melodies on. And you know, the ones that Roy had written, Ripper wrote all his lyrics and melodies for it. So there was a lot of songs that me and Ripper worked together on, but some of those songs I had written most of the lyrics and melodies, and then some of the other ones he added in some lyrics and melodies into them. So that was pretty much with me. I did some complete writing on some things too. I mean, Ripper was very, he's always very busy. So when I was working and writing, I like writing. I mean, since I am able to write my own stuff and sing through everything, it was not anything that I didn't want to do. I was like, Ripper, you know, I'd rather have you write this. But he was like, you know, for certain songs, I just came up with some ideas for things, and that's what he actually wound up liking and he wound up using. So, you know, our first video, that song, that was a song that I had written, everything for myself. But I mean, and you know, the drums, the way this record was done, it was actually one of these things that we're hoping the next record is not going to be exactly the same. Everybody was in different spots throughout the creation of this record. It's not like we used anything that was programmed or anything like that, but you know, Steve was doing his bass in his studio, and Mark was doing his drums in his studio, and Ripper was doing vocals in his studio, and I was doing my guitars and mine, and Roy was doing his stuff as his. And, you know, he took it down to Brazil to do some of the mixing and things like that. But, you know, everything that Steve did, we just, you know, he did his bass. I mean, it was very, very, very few of the things that, that Mark did that I had any changes to in my songs. I think there might've been two beats that I just thought would have been a little bit more, you know, effective, a little bit straighter to, you know, because he's got a great prog metal and rock feel that was playing, and I just wanted a couple things more simple. But other than that, I mean, everybody was able just to do their own things, and that's the thing we're hoping to fix and work with when we go to do another record, is just get everybody together and, you know, track some things more in the position of not necessarily saying we weren't a band, but do it more in that sense where we could write the stuff and record it like that.
I see. Well, the album kicks off with the heavy track Lightspeed Marching, which tells the listener straight away the mission statement of the album. You fired on all cylinders right from the start, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, that was one of the first songs I'd written for the record. And, you know, that's one of the ones that I actually had written the lyrics and melodies for as well. But I mean, I just wanted to come up with something that I thought was really going to be liked by the people that were fans of us. You know, I wasn't really trying to recreate the world of heavy metal there. It was just like when we spoke to Frontiers, like, well, you know, you're gonna have, you know, Sabotage fans and Priest fans and Testament fans. So I just turned around and said, all right, well, I'm going to write some stuff that I feel fits into that mode, and some stuff that I thought that Ripper would sing really well, and that would just be really good traditional heavy metal music, and stuff also, you know, at the end of the day would be very fun to play live. So that's what that song is, and it just, it's got a lot of feeling to it, a lot of energy, and there's a lot of music and a lot of guitar and a lot of metal in it.
Yeah. I also really enjoy Temple of the Soul, and it's amazing how the material as a whole fits Tim's voice. I think that with you guys being old partners in crime, I think it helped you write the songs that suited his voice quite well, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, Temple of the Soul was actually another one that I had written and had a lot of the lyrics and melodies for him, and Ripper added some of the parts into that song that weren't ones that I had finished. And that was the same thing. I said, I'm like, I'm writing this and I feel that it's something he could sing. And that one, you know, to me, I just thought had a really cool edge to it where it could fall a little bit to the kind of prog metal side in the feeling of the song, but still stay, you know, heavy metal. And that one is one of my favorite songs on the record too.
Yeah. And I think, well, Mark Zoner is one of my favorite drummers of all time. His work with Fate's Warning and Warlord is off the charts. So I'm excited about him being part of the band. I think the song A Game for me is where he shines the most in this release. But his signature electronic packs are absent this time. Is it because it didn't fit the material, or was there another reason for that? Or
his I don't, you know, I don't
his
really
pads.
Know.
Yeah,
I do not know. You know, I don't have the answer to that question. That's something that you probably would have to ask him. I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. Well, and if I had to pick a song that summarizes the whole album in one song, it would be Stand and Fight. It definitely has vintage elements of Sabotage and Priest with Zonder's drumming there, Steve's prominent bass sound. No wonder this one was chosen as a single, right? Do you have a favorite one that you picked already or not?
That's weird. I mean, because I do like all the three that you just spoke about. I mean, they'll kind of fall into my term as my favorite songs on the record would probably be those two. I think the Come Together song has got some really cool music in it too. I think there's just some cool metal and music to that, but I think all around they all have a different personality. But I mean, if I was to pick my favorites, I think it would have to be those three that you started off with as my favorites.
Okay. And, well, the last two songs, The Path and Alone in the Darkness, for some reason, they stood out for me as being more aggressive, more, I think, darker and moodier. The last one, Alone in the Darkness, even to a higher extent, was it intentional to have, like, a darker feel towards the end of the album and leave the faster numbers at the beginning or not?
Well, I mean, that was pretty much the song structure of where we were going to be putting things on the record. That was something that Roy just kind of came up with and how he felt if it should go. And I let him go with that. I mean, a lot of times with me, if I choose what I want to hear and where I want to put it, everybody will turn around and they'll get in my face about, I mean, even with my own solo records, I'll see the way critics will go at my albums, and they won't think something that I put second or third should be a second or third on a record, because maybe for some people that's the one that should be at the end of the record. But, you know, it's kind of weird, because sometimes maybe people won't make it to the end of the album, so you don't want to let a song rest that long at times. But that was, you know, it was something that Roy came up with. And I know when I was sending music to Ripper, that Alone in the Darkness, that was one of the first ones that he had finished his stuff to, and he just was really, really excited about that, you know, what he'd added and what he'd felt, and the, you know, the little elements of what he would always say, you know, his influences from someone like David Bowie were going into that song. And I just thought that was really cool, because I had written a bunch of different kinds of metal songs in the ones that I'd sent for him to work his stuff out onto, and that was one of the ones that he really was excited about putting his own stuff to.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, Frontiers Records has been known for putting together supergroups with musicians of different backgrounds, much like Spirits of Fire. So the question that begs to be asked this time is, are you guys thinking of Spirits of Fire as a band or a project?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think of it as a as a band, because if I look at it as a project, then for me it's not going to have the same energy as if I would be working on new songs, because we do want to do another record. I would like this to play, so I would love this thing to become something that, you know, is more of a band. Everybody has so much stuff going on, you know, so it's really hard to put down the terms as far as what is going to be everybody's quote unquote band. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, when we got together and we shot videos and we were around, everybody, you know, got along great. And I think that it's something that would be very good live. I think this band live would definitely play very well. And I think that's where the determination of that question would be able to be answered even better, is, you know, what's going to happen when this thing gets its chance to play live, and what is it like when we're on stage? And I think that's when all those questions will even be answered amongst ourselves. I mean, mm-hmm. whether or not this is a band or not, it's what happens when that group of people get on stage and start making music.
I see. And, well, you in particular, you have other activities, of course, including a prolific solo career, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra tours, and other endeavors such as your culinary adventures. Would you elaborate a little bit further on those?
Well, I mean, I just always, it's weird, I never have enough time, but I always stay busy. I add things into my schedule, even when my schedule doesn't have the time for them. And I think that's just because, as an artist, I like doing things other than music. I mean, I work with the hot sauce stuff, which is very fun, even though the critics in the hot sauce world are sometimes can be worse than the musicians, because everybody could cook. You know, not everybody can play guitar. They could have an opinion on your guitar playing, but they might not be a guitar player. So when you hear it, if they don't like something, you kind of take it a different way. It's like, whatever, that guy just doesn't like my guitar playing. Mm-hmm. But if somebody is a what they call a foodie or a critic in that world, they'll get into it and they'll say what they would have done to it if they were cooking. So you start to get into that thing where it's like, uh-oh. But everybody seems to have a different taste bud with that. But the recipes that I make are a lot of fun. And the company I have, High River Sauces, with me and my partner Steve, well, I actually, he was working with me as a manager for my solo stuff, and he works with E1 Music, and, you know, he does a lot of work with Zach Wilde. He's just a great salesman. So he was able to take that idea of using hot sauce and develop our company. It's just, we've become like the heavy metal of hot sauce. We're kind of taking over the world slowly in that. So that's a lot of fun. And the other things that I do, I mean, I had this little stuffed elephant that I nicknamed the Metal Fin, and I started making children's clothes and jewelry and things. And I just really enjoy that one too, because I do a lot of sea glass art. And that's something for me that's really fun to do. I mean, I make lots of different cartoon characters and artwork pieces out of the sea glass, and I give money to children's charities off of that. So it's a, you know, these other things, I think for me, are ones that when, you know, sometimes you hit things in the music business that can become slightly frustrating. And I think to do some of these other things, it just allows me to create items and things that kind of balance you out as a person and an artist, so that you're really not, you're not getting stressed out if something happens. Where, like, you know, even recently with Frontiers, where, you know, the Pledge Music Front office store campaign that they have, they're having problems with that company, and things like that are closing down. So it's like you could get stressed with the music business, getting involved in a lot of the business things that come, but a lot of these other things that I do really just get me more excited and leveled out as a person and an artist.
I see. And particularly about the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, it has taken a life of its own, and I think your audiences keep growing each year. I think, is there a chance of you guys doing a non-winter, non-holiday tour eventually or not?
Well, I mean, we did a bunch of those, and the person that created Trans-Siberian Orchestra and our boss and our you know, our mentor, Paul O'Neill, he passed away. And, you know, a lot of what TSO did was based on his visions of what should happen and what he wanted to do. And we're going to put, you know, when we did the Beethoven's Last Night tours, the first time we did that, he had giant shows inside theaters with, you know, the same way we developed the Christmas show, because the very first time we did the Christmas shows, he's like, we're going to go out, we're going to play this, you know, with a show that's going to be the size of us headlining an arena in theaters. And he just always wanted to put TSO over the top. And with it being his baby, when we decided to first do you know, the tours that were not Christmas, he had the images put together as to what it is. Now, the thing now, it's one of these things where it has to be something that his family and the spirits of the band are going to want to put together and make happen that way. I'd love to see it happen, but it just has to be put together in a way that we all know that Paul would be happy about, and the way he would want his music put out there, which is a very high level in the production end. And that's something that's not assembled as easily as possible for, you know, just sticking a band out and go, hey, let's get a tour bus and go play. I mean, Trans-Siberian Orchestra always has that factor of being, you know, cutting edge on the production end and the stage end and what it is we do live. So, you know, that's something that needs to be put together, and really in the respect of Paul's memory and what everybody decides is going to be right for that.
I agree. Yeah. And your last solo album, The Jest of Squirt, is still somewhat fresh out of the oven. It was released on the second half of last year, and it got great reviews. So did you tour to promote it, and is that still in the cards or not?
I really would like to. Last year, and it's not anything that I'd spoken a lot about. I had a slight accident happen in the summertime last year, and I haven't really put a lot of information out about that. But I was kind of stepped aside for a while to let myself heal from something that had happened to me, you know, physically in an accident. So, you know, I don't like to put my personal life online. So what I had planned to try to work out and start around that was kind of put to a side for me just to get myself back together, you know, physically. You know, I'd love to do some shows now. I'm looking at seeing what's around for me to do this year. And you know, like you said, the record's still new, and I can go out and go fresh on that now. So I'm just, you know, getting the years coming off. And once I know what the schedule is going to be, whether it be playing or not, or where with Spirits of Fire, I'm going to look further into putting my own thing out.
Understood. And, well, this interview wouldn't be complete if we didn't ask you about Sabotage. Are there any plans whatsoever to tour again with them, record anything new? And what would you say is your favorite era or favorite Sabotage album?
Well, I'm going to start with the end of that question. I think my favorite album is probably Hall of the Mountain King. And that's just because I think out of all the records, that really was the one where it's Sabotage kind of like, not necessarily rewrote, but put its foot down for its identity as a metal band. Mm-hmm. You know, when the band first came out with Sirens and Dungeons and Into Power Tonight, it kind of took a little warble into Fight for the Rock. And when Paul started working with Sabotage for Hall of the Mountain King, that was the time when it was like, okay, well, Sabotage is going to go back to being Sabotage again. And, you know, the level of music and metal on that record and the writing. And I just think, you know, John's voice as a metal singer on that album, I think that was probably, in my opinion, one of the best heavy metal vocal performances ever was that whole Mountain King album. He went from high to low to distorted to metal to screaming and screeching, and it just effortless the way he sang on that album. I mean, he did it again on Gutter Ballet, but Hall of the Mountain King really took it in the metal way that was just crazy. I mean, a song like Beyond the Doors of the Dark was just to me one of the best heavy metal vocal performances ever. And I think Chris took his guitar playing to that level for Gutter. You know, I think he rose up and really just took you know, the guitar playing of Chris Oliva to a really, really huge level for Gutter Ballet. I mean, he had some incredible guitar work on that record. Not like he didn't on Mountain King, but he was really, for lack of a better word, he was excited about showing people what he could do for Gutter when he knew that the band was taking steps in the community as far as its level of fans and where people were going to see him again. So I think he really wanted to go out there and kick some butt with what was being released on Gutter.
Mm-hmm. And as far as touring again or recording a new album, what would you say is the limiting factor right now?
You know what? It's always been the same thing for like that. When was the last tour we did? It was 2002. It Sabotage stopped playing, and there's always been the want for the band to play, and a lot of the band members wanted to play, but it's not going to be the right thing until everybody is on the same page with it. So I think that's the main thing. It's like everybody that's involved has to be on the same page. Now, of course, now with Paul being away from that, he was such a part of the band, as a writer and a producer and a father figure for us too, as well, as far as getting Sabotage out there. So, now at a point in time where we would really need Paul, he's not around, but we've been speaking about it. We added Chance into the TSO tour last year. And that was, something that his daughter really wanted to add. And, his family is working with us all the time on, making sure Paul's legacy keeps going and people get to see things. And that was the song that was added into the TSO show this year. And there was really huge response about it. People loved hearing that song. And even more so, people are asking what is going to happen with Sabotage. So I'm hoping, in the sense of where everybody else is too, that we get to get something going and it does come out and play. I'm going to be patient like I've been for a very long time with that whole question. One day I would love to, if somebody said tomorrow, we've got a Sabotage tour, we're going, I'd pack my bags and go, and that's how I am with it. So, I'm just waiting like everybody else. But I think that, the demand is there, and it's been such a long time. Every band has reunited and toured and played, and Sabotage is the one that hasn't.
Yeah.
So I think there's a large amount of fans and whole new generations of metal fans. If somebody had a 3-year-old kid the last time we toured, that kid's almost 20 years old now, and that kid's a metal fan, and he wants to see Sabotage, and his friends want to see Sabotage. And I think that's something that would be a lot more successful and exciting than everybody even realizes, if they're thinking about what it is Sabotage could do, because it's a lot more than what fans we had in the past. It's this whole new generation of metal fans that are there.
Absolutely, man. I think, Priest, Maiden, Saxon, they're still selling, shows everywhere. Van Halen was able to reunite. I can't see the reason why you guys couldn't get together and do something,
And yeah, we're always playing together. We're always in the same spot. We just never seem to put it together, but I'm pretty sure it'll happen soon.
I see. Well, let me pick your brain for a minute, because my fondest memory of Sabotage was seeing you guys on the Wake of Magellan tour in São Paulo in a festival with Dream Theater, Saxon, Megadeth, Glenn Hughes, Manowar, and Slayer. Do you remember that particular show? It was in 1998, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an incredible day. We went up there and we'd heard what Sabotage had as an audience in Brazil. We went down for the first time and did our own shows there, and they were pretty packed and exciting. But when we went up there and stepped into that stadium and we watched the way that every single one of those kids knew the music and liked that band, there was just such a relationship for us and then the Brazilian metal fans, it was really awesome. And for me, it was pretty exciting because, I got to go down there and really just make sure that people were hearing, the music as good as I could to represent Chris. And the Brazilian metal fans really took a liking to me as a guitar player. And I thought that was something that always was very special to me.
Yeah, count me in as one of them, man, because I was there and I remember the show to this day. So,
awesome.
Yeah. And I'm also curious about your time with Doro on the road and also Metal Church. Share with us some memories of those two gigs if you can. And hey, funny enough, they just announced a co-headlining tour a few days ago.
I know, that's pretty funny. I looked at that. I'm like, there's two bands that I played with that are touring together.
Yeah.
I mean, Doro is just, she's the consummate professional. That girl lives for her fans and her band, and she's such a great artist and such an amazing singer, and she sings such a long set every night. She doesn't care if she's tired or sick or whatever it is. She goes out there and gives her whole entire life and body and soul to that music. So for me, it was something I was really proud of, to be able to go up there and to work with her. I think, the thing that probably kept me from being a long time member of working with her, besides the fact that I don't live in Europe, was the fact that my, schedule was one where I couldn't be with her all year long. And Doro is a band person. She loves her band. Mm-hmm. She represents her band The pictures of them with her, even though it's called Doro, she has the photos of the guys in her band next to her everywhere she goes, and she's very proud of them and that work. And you know, as much as I was proud of the time I got to be in it, you know, she deserved to have somebody in her band that was going to be able to be there all the time. And when she got, you know, Boz to take over for what it was that I was doing, I think he really fit that bill with them. And it's something that I'm always happy to do, but you know, it's great that she keeps going, and she always will. I mean, and that was actually something I was supposed to be doing, was the Prog Power concert with her last September, because her guys had trouble with their visa activity or something like that had happened at that point. And after in the middle of August, when my situation had happened, I wasn't physically able to get down there to do it at that time without, it being concern on my health. So that's why I wasn't able to do that show, which was it was upsetting to me, because I didn't want to ever let Doro down. And, you know, I felt kind of like I did in that way, but it wasn't anything that was my fault, but it really bothered me. And Metal Church, I mean, I was out actually playing with Doro on the Monsters of Rock cruise, and Jeff was out there playing with Metal Church, and they had a problem with their guitar player's eye. He had a retina pop.
Wow.
So I was just out there, and they asked me, you know, what it would be possible to go on the road to do some dates till he was healthier. And I said, yeah. And I went home and just worked on some of the most fun heavy metal music I ever learned in my life. I mean, that Metal Church music is born for a stage. And I went out for a month and had probably one of the greatest times of my life playing with that band. That was a lot of fun. They're great musicians, and the music, like I said, it is just so much fun to play live. And it was like a band that I'd worked with forever. And if they ever needed me to do something again, I'd be glad to do it. But they're, you know, in a great lineup with what they have right now. And that's how that was.
Yeah. They're on a roll for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And going back to Spirits of Fire, I know there are multiple editions coming out in February, including a red vinyl version. Do you collect vinyl yourself?
I've started to again, and that's something that I'm actually looking forward to. And I haven't gotten any of those in my hand, but I really want to, and I'm excited about seeing all of that. So that's definitely something I'd like to do.
Very cool. And I read a quote that Tim is so excited about the material that he's already expecting to record a second album. So what's the next step for Spirits of Fire?
That would be me getting down and writing more music. So I'm going to start. I've already turned my studio on and started to list up some tracks that don't really have much going on so far. It's like Spirits of Fire 2, track number 1, track number 2. So that'll be it. And we'll just see, get our schedules together and make that all happen. In the meantime, I just hope everybody enjoys this new record. And I actually have to jump from you, because I've got another person waiting to speak to me now. Like I said, they put these interviews way too close together, and I apologize for having the bailout.
That's okay, man. Thank you so much for your time. All the best with the new release, and leave us with the last words for your fans.
Well, you know what? You've supported everything that we've done for so many decades, and hopefully you guys enjoy this, because that's what we did it for. You know, was for us to give something for everybody to hear and get a chance to see us together. And, you know, we'll have some fun with it, and hopefully on the road we can play the Spirits of Fire and a little bit of music from all the bands we've been in, and see if we can grow this into something that everybody gets to hear every year.
Thank you so much, man. Take care.
All right. Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this interview with the very eloquent Chris Caffrey of Savatage, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and now with the Spirits of Fire. We strongly suggest that you subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you're up to speed with all our interviews and our Talking Perspectives podcasts. I also invite you to like us on Facebook and Twitter, and check us out on www.sonicperspective.com. We're going to leave you now with the song Stand and Fight from Spirits of Fire's debut self-titled album. Take care, and see you next time.